Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Ted Zayin Amud Aleph, four lines down. The Gemara says, Ki ata Rav Dimi, Amar, Ma'ati Chtiv, what is meant by the Pasuk in Mishlei? Mivarech Re'eu B'kol Gadol, someone who gives blessings to his friend in a very loud and boisterous manner. Baboker Hashkem, when you awaken in the morning, Klala Techashev Lo, it'll end up being something that is a curse rather than a blessing. Kigon, what does that mean? Demikla Lush Biza, he goes to a host, Vitarchu Kamei Shapir, and they really took care of him. They did a great job taking care of him. The Machar Nafik Yati Bashuka, and the next day he goes out and sits down in the shuk, Vamar, Rachmona Nivarche Leplanya, Kosh Baruch Hu should bless so-and-so, Dahachi Tarach Kamei, because he did all of this great stuff for me, he really took care of me, Vishaminan Inche, and then people hear it, Vazlinan, and then they go, Vahansin Lei. And then they cause him problems. The way that the Rabbeinu Gershom explains it over here is that Antzile, the Shiltonim, is the government. The government's going to get wind of the fact that this guy is wealthy because he's providing for this individual. And that wealth then will be subject to taxation, or the authorities will try to grab some of his wealth. And so you're causing him problems by publicizing something that he did. So you're really speaking positively about him. But that positive statement leads to a detrimental outcome, which is that the authorities, government, are going to come now and take away his possessions. And you can see something similar within Rashi, where he brings two possibilities as what the explanation is over here. One is that Shamei Inche Alamim, people who are strong men that are thugs, Shuashir Vazavi Ansile the Momonei, they're going to try to shake him down for his money. Lishna Achrina, another possibility is Ansile, Shemit ach nesanin etzlo orchim ach mechalin mimono. When they hear he's a great host, then many people are going to try to stay by him or be guests by him, and they're going to drain him of his resources. So either one of those two things is problematic, because your positive statement leads to a detrimental outcome. And so because of that, you have to be careful about how you praise an individual, even though everything you said was true and what you were doing was positive, or even the statement you made was positive. Nevertheless, you have to look at the greater picture of what that statement could precipitate. And if it's going to precipitate something that's bad, then that's exactly what the Pasuk Mishlei says, that Mivarech Re'eu B'Kol Gadol, you publicize a great bracha about the person, you wake up in the morning, it turns out to be a curse, what you've done, because your praise has turned into something negative for him. The Shita Mikubetzit over here discusses different scenarios as to where that is true or not true. But he speaks about the Gemara in Brachot that says that one should be positive and compliment the host that takes care of them. And he differentiates and says, Hatam Ari Kishinu Ben Anashim Tznuim V'Tovim. That's when he's amongst people who are good people, who are not going to take advantage of this individual. There you can speak freely and compliment the individual. But when it's in a public area, or when it's amongst people who are not appropriate or will not use the information properly, then you have an obligation to withhold that information and not compliment the individual. And he goes on to say that that may be part of the explanation for the Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara says that a Talmud Chacham is allowed to lie about certain things. One of those is his Ushpiza, is the person that hosted him. He says that could be from both perspectives. It can be the perspective if they treated him really well, he shouldn't tell everybody about that, but he can downplay it. And vice versa, if they didn't treat him so well, then he doesn't have to really tell the truth about it. He can say, yeah, it was fine, it was good. So he's giving you some leeway here in terms of the scenarios that you have to be careful. Context matters. To whom you are speaking also matters. And all of those factors will play into whether the compliment is really just a compliment, or the compliment is going to be, in a bigger picture, something that turns out to be negative. Tani Rav Dimi, Achud Rav Safra. So we have a braita that's brought from Dimi, the brother of Rav Safra. Lo olam, al yisaper adam b'tovato shel chaveiro. Person shouldn't speak positively about his friend. Shemitoch tovato ba lidei ra'ato. Because through that good, it ends up turning out to be negative. So Rashi over here says, ba lidei ra'ato, kishehu misaper b'tovato yoter midai. He does it too much. So that's Rashi's addition here. The Gemara does not say Yoter Midai. Rashi adds in the word Yoter Midai. And similarly, the Rabbi Kiveger brings that the Rif also had the similar girsa of Yoter Midai. And Rashi says that's because that results in a negative outcome. This is classic avak lashon hara, which is that you're making a statement that will facilitate or engender lashon hara, and that's either because you yourself are saying so much good about this individual, you'll have to mitigate it a little bit with something negative to take down the positiveness of your statement, or if you're doing it in a scenario where other people are going to feel they have to somehow offset the tremendous compliments that you're giving, then they're going to end up saying negative things to level out the playing field or to offset the positiveness that you are expressing. So if you're just too positive, it can have a negative outcome. And it's similar to what we just said in the previous statements, which are sometimes you have to look at the bigger picture. Even though you might be doing it for the right reasons or being positive, sometimes when you're just too positive or you go overboard, that leads to the opposite effect. And instead of it resulting in something positive, it results in something negative, either because you yourself mitigate it or because others offset it. The Rambam has a slightly different formulation, which is, al yisaper bifnei son'av, that if he shouldn't do this in front of people who he knows don't like him. So that would be another contextual type of problem, which is, don't compliment the individual or do all these things in front of people you know don't like him, because their only choice is going to have to be to respond to you, and they're going to have to respond in the negative. So this is, again, avak lashon hara, but it also is just common sense that you have to know, according to the Rambam, in front of whom you are speaking when you say such a thing. According to Rashi and the Rif, you have to be careful not to go overboard, not to do too much, but you should be guarded in your words, guarded in your compliments. There's nothing wrong with complimenting someone, but you have to do it in a way that it doesn't engender a negative response, not from yourself and not from others. Igadamre, Rav Dimi Achud Rav Safra Chalash, he was ill. Our Rav Safra Leshulebe, Rav Safra came in to inquire of his well-being. Amale, Tetidli, give me credit for the fact that Kaimi Dukoda Amar Rabbonon, that I kept everything the Rabbonon said. Amale, Ha, Mimikaimet, did you really keep everything? Did you keep this? Ola ma yisaper adam bitovato shechaveiro, shmitoch tovato, bali degnuto. Exactly the memra that we just brought before, that Rav Dimi, brother of Rav Safra, brought. Over here, it's Rav Safra who's telling Rav Dimi about this memra of the Rabbanan, because Rav Dimi was saying he kept all the mitzvot of the Rabbanan, and Rav Safra is saying to him, did you keep this one as well? Amalei lo shmili, I never heard of it. If you have a shmili, kiyamta. Had I known about it, or had I heard about it, I would have kept it as well. That brings the story down in a different context. It comes through Rav Dimi as well, but it's because Rav Dimi is finding out about it from Rav Safra, versus in the first case where Rav Safra is just a way to identify which Rav Dimi we're speaking about. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yonatan, Ashivat varim nigaim baim. Nigaim, tzarat comes because of seven different things. One is alashon hara, for speaking evilly or inappropriately about another person. Ashvichut damim, killing. Ashvat shav, taking unnecessary shvuot or possibly shvuat sheker as well. Val gilo erayot, illicit relations. Val gasuta ruach, haughtiness. Val gazel, theft. Val torot ayin, and miserliness. And the Gemara is going to bring proofs to each one of these. And obviously then we're going to have to search for a common denominator between them. Al lashon hara dichtiv, because the pasuk that we quoted yesterday, Belashni basete re'eyu, the one who speaks in secret about his friend, oto atzmit, he I will destroy or I will cut off. And in yesterday's daf we had the atzmit, smitut, that we learned from the word smitut, that it means chalutin. And then we learned mitzora muchlat. So we saw the association between atzmit and mitzora muchlat, or tzarat. And that's over here too. The lashon hara is associated with a punishment of tzarat. Ashvichut damim dichtiv. The pasuk says after Yoav assassinates Avner, David curses Yoav and says, "Al yikaret mi beit Yoav zav umitzora," that there should be no missing from the house of Yoav, none of these individuals. A zav mitzora. He goes on about the curse, but one of those items is a mitzora. As you see, David, because of the killing of Avner, curses Yoav with the punishment of Zerat. Kipshuat Shav is Dichtiv, is the story by Naaman, where he comes to get his tzorat cured by Elisha, and Elisha refuses to take payment from him for the cure that he provides. Therefore, Naaman will be indebted, in a sense, to Elisha for what he did, and it'll be that he did it out of Hashem's will, and therefore Naaman would be, in a sense, indebted to Hashem, and so he takes no remuneration for what he does. Gehazi, Elisha's right-hand man, decides that this is a good way for him to profit from what's going on. And it says, Vayadov Gehazi Achrei Naaman, after Elisha releases Naaman and he refuses to take payment, Gehazi chases him down. He sees Gehazi coming, he jumps off his chariot, he says, what's going on? And then he tells him that two new people came from the Bnei Nevi'im, and Elisha sent me to go get the payment that you had offered before so that we could supply for these individuals. Vayomer Naaman, Naaman says, Hoel, kach kikarayim. Of course, go ahead, take the kikarayim, which were these kikar kesef. Again, it's a lot of money. Vayifrotz bo, vayetzar kikarayim kesef, v'shnei charitim, v'shnei chalifot begadim, v'yitelen shnei nara, v'yisu lefanav. So he gives him all this stuff, and then when Gehazi comes back, Elisha says, what did you do? I know what you did here. You were Mechalal Hashem, and he curses Gehazi with the tzarat of Naaman. So Chazal interpret the word Ho'el over here to be associated with a Shavuah. And that is when Naaman sees him, he says, Ho'el, take a Shavuah that Elisha sent you. And so Gehazi does take that Shavuah Shav, and the resultant punishment for Gehazi was Uchtiv Tzarat Naaman Tidbak Becha Ubizaracha, that it will be with you and with your offspring, which Chazal say is the story of the Arba Mitzoraim that we read as the Torah per Parshat Tzora. And that was the punishment for taking the Shavuot Shav. Again, the Pashtut of Pasuk's Hoel was that he couldn't be more ready to give it, and he was so excited that he actually could pay the money, and that's what it means, Hoel. He did it immediately, he was pleased to do it, but Chazal interpret the word Hoel to be associated with the word Allah, that take a Shavuah that you were sent by Elisha. That when Paro takes Sarah, and the problems there obviously of Gilui Arayot taking a married woman, there they're punished with Nigaim, they're punished with the Tzarat. Balgasel Taruach on Hoadiness, Tichtev, Ubechez Kato Gavali Bo, speaking about Uziyahu HaMelech, when he reached the pinnacle of his success as the king and he basically unified Yehuda and Israel, and they were now back at their times of glory. Gavalibo, he became haughty, ad hashchit, to the point where it was destructive. Vayim ol b'Hashem Elokav. And then he rebelled, or did something inappropriate towards Hashem, his God, and v'hatzarat zarcha b'mitzcho. And that resulted in him breaking out in tzarat. The story there is that he decided, now that he was the king, and he was so successful, he also wanted to be the Kohen Gadol, and he wanted to bring the Ketoret in the Mikdash. So he grabs the Ketoret, and he's heading in, and they're telling him, don't do it, don't do it. He ignores them, and as he's going up to the Mizbeach with the Ketoret, he breaks out in Tzarat, and they whisk him out of the Beit HaMikdash, because he broke out in Tzarat. Again, there, it's an interesting story that nothing could stop him, but as soon as he became a Mitzorat, that did stop him. But what the Gemara is focused on here is that the Gassut HaRuach, which is described Uziyahu's sin, was caused by his haughtiness, and the resultant punishment was that he broke out in Tzarat. Tosfos actually points out over here something very interesting, that is in Divrei Yamim Aleph in Perek Hey, it has a list of all the Kohanim Gedolim that served from the time of Pinchas through Bayit Rishon, and over there there's an interesting line. It gives one after the next, one who gave birth to one, who gave birth to another, and then as V'Yochanan Olidet Azariah, who asher kihein babayit asher bana Shlomo b'Yerushalayim. He served as a kohen in the Beit HaMikdash that was built by Shlomo in Yerushalayim, I mean as the kohen gadol. But all the other kohenim that are performing after him also served in Bayit Rishon. So why is it specifically say that he was asher kihein babayit asher bana Shlomo b'Yerushalayim? So Tosafot over here says that's because he served in the time of Uziyahu HaMelech, and he's the one who tried to stand up to Uziyahu HaMelech to stop him. And therefore he's given extra credit because he tried to defend the kuhuna in the face of this attempt to usurp the kuhuna by Uziyahu HaMelech. when it comes to the Tzarat HaBayit, it says there that the Kohen, before he comes to look at the Tzarat, tells the person to empty out his possessions from the house. Tano, and so we have a Braita, who kones mamon sheno shelo, he took in, or he stole money that wasn't his. Now the Kohen's demanding that he display it all, and that he distribute it all, because now everybody's going to know what's in his house. On uba asher lo habayit. The person who has, again, tzarat habayit, will come to the Kohen. The description of that individual is, v'asher lo habayit. It's his bayit. Tana debay Rabbi Shmuel, mishim yuchad beitolo. It's someone whose house only is for themselves, but he doesn't share it with others, and therefore it results in tzarat. So here we had 7 items that are resulting in tzarat. Now the question is, what is the common denominator between all of these items? And I would suggest that the common denominator in these items is the fact that all of these people don't know their place or overstepping their bounds. And that's especially true in the Gasuta Ruach. Someone is haughty, doesn't know their limitations, doesn't know their place. And you see that with Uzziahu, where instead of just wanting to be the king, he now wants to be the Kohen Gadol. You see that by Gezel, by theft, where an individual goes and takes that which doesn't belong to him, and he steals. Tzarut Ayin is a similar idea, where the individual doesn't understand or doesn't have the capacity to share with others. So he takes, in essence, what doesn't belong to him. It's based on something we've spoken about in the past, where in Kesef Tavetami, if you look at the Orach Chaim there in Parshat Mishpatim, he discusses over there that when a person has sufficient wealth, the wealth doesn't really belong to him. It belongs to him and others, and he has to distribute it to the others. Again, over here, he's taking what belongs to others and keeping it for himself. By Gilui Arayot, it's obvious there also, illicit relations, is he's overstepping his bounds, especially if it involves Eshet Ish. Again, he's taking something that doesn't belong to him. And Shvichut Damim is that he's playing the role of God, and he's killing someone, and that he's also usurping the power of the king, who's agreeing to have a peace with Abner, and Yoav is stepping into the shoes of the king and killing Abner, which is the purview of the king, not the purview of Yoav. Again, which is overstepping his bounds, and the Lashon Hara is also described by many of the Farshim as being a person's inability to reconcile with the success of others, and therefore Lashon Hara, again, is a person who oversteps his bounds and speaks about other people, degrades other people, or tries to put other people in their place, or show what's wrong with other people rather than dealing with themselves. And the last one is the Shvat Shav, which is also something where a person doesn't know the bounds of truth and therefore is willing to lie or take a Shvat Shav. So all these people really are overstepping their bounds or don't know their limitations. Therefore, they get tzarat, because the punishment of tzarat is badad yeshev, the chutz l'machaneh moshavo. He's now going to be isolated and placed outside of society, and to learn that lesson, that he overstepped his bounds. Now, the way that we fix that problem is to isolate him and to put him in a place where he learns his limitations, and he no longer can interact within society, overstep his bounds. And that might be the common denominator between all of these items. Right, so now the Gemara says, Zini, is that really true? That this is where Tzarat comes because of Lashon Hara? V'amar Rav Anani Bar Sason, Lama Nismecha Parshat Bigdei Kuna, the Parshat Korbanot. What is the nature of the juxtaposition of the Parshia of the Bigdei Kuna, which is Parshat Tetzaveh, which is juxtaposed to the Parshat of Korbanot, which is the Miluim that are described at the end of Parshat Tetzaveh? V'amar Lacha, Ma Korbanot Mechaprim, Av Bigdei Kuna Mechaprim. Just like the Korbanot provide Kapara atonement, so do the Bigdei Kuna provide Kapara. And again, the Bigdei Kuna are essential to the Avodah and the Mikdash, because a Kohen who's not wearing Bigdei Kuna is not considered to be a Kohen, or is considered to be a Zar. That Devizman She Bigdehem Alehem Kunatem Alehem. When their Bigadim are on, their Kuna is associated with them. So they're an integral part of the Avodah. And just like the korbanot, which are part of the avodah, provide kapara, so do the bigdei kuna. Ketonet, the tunic, mechaperet al shvichut damim. That is mechaper on killing. Dichtiv, vayitbalu et ha'ketonet badam. That they dip the ketonet Yosef in the dam. It doesn't sound like there that it's a kapara, but it is associated with shvichut damim. And as Rashi says over here, remez hayalahem, they had this misora that they tonet mechaperet al shvichut damim. And the note over here on the side, it says that maybe nusach hacher remez hayalahem, because tvilah hainu kapara. And so the limud is added vayit belu. That vayit belu is not just that they dipped the ktonet in the dam. Vayit belu means tvilat of kapara, tvilat of tahara, that comes through the ktonet. And that's what's being read out of this pasuk over here. Michnesayim, the shorts or the pants, mechaprim al gidiloy arayot, they take care of illicit relations, dichtiv, basalahem michnesay bad, lechasod basar erva. Because the michnesay bad cover over the erva, that's both literally that they cover over the erva, and also figuratively that they provide a kapara for the erva. Mitznefet mechaperet al gasei aruach, the hat or the turban that they wear is mechaper on people who are haughty, in the Rabbi Chanina. Da'amar Rabbi Chanina yavo davar shebegova yechaper al masei gova. The thing that's at the pinnacle, at the top of the individual, should be mechaper on something that comes from being up high, or in essence being haughty, or being someone who has ga'ava. Avneit mechaperet al hirurei alev. And the avneit, which is the belt, is mechaper on improper thoughts. Ahecha de'ite, because that's where it is placed. Rashi in Zvachim says that they used to put it keneged atzilei yedehem. They used to put it by the elbows. Dehainu keneged alev. That's right around the area of the heart. It's not under the arms of the individual, but rather lower down by the elbows, but not so far down below the loins of the individual where you'd normally assume that an avneit is. And Tosva brings on the previous amud, Ravneit hu, kumo chagur shel shesh arukah meod. It was very long. Ve'itad nami b'midrash, sheya kohen mekifo svivav bet pamim. He used to wrap it around himself twice. Keneged lev shel adam, around the heart of the individual. And interestingly enough, the shita mekubetzet brings down that Gilyon yesh b'midrash, sheya mekifo lamed bet pamim. He wrapped it around 32 times. Keneged halev, opposite the heart, which is the gematria of lev, is 32. Which is the number of times that he wrapped the gartel basically around himself in order to add up to the gematria of lev. Whether it was twice and it was keneged alev, or whether it was 32 times keneged alev, the idea is that the avneit is at the point or near the heart, and that is because it comes to be mechaper on those hirurei halev. Now, choshen, the breastplate, mechaper al hadinim, on ivuta din, or improper judgment, or people who cheat in measures and things like that. Dichtiv, basita choshen mishpat. So the word mishpat is associated with the choshen. Ephod mechaper la voda zara. And the ephod is mechaper on idolatry. Dichtiv, ve'en ephod utrafim. And so the way they're reading the pasuk is not that there's no ephod and trafim, but rather ve'en ephod, since there is no ephod, utrafim, there are trafim, there are idols, or there are statues. So when there's no ephod, there is a sin of trafim. Me'il mechaper loshon hara, and the cloak is mechaper loshon hara. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu yavar davar shebekol, the item that makes noise, which are the bells on the bottom of the me'il, mechaper al maseh hakol, and it'll be mechaper on those that make noise, meaning those that are mechaper loshon hara. Tzitz mechaper al maseh azepanim. And it sits as mechaper on brazen individuals. Ke'echtiv ha'chavayam metzach Aharon. The placement of the tzitz is on the forehead of Aharon. And the symbol of brazenness is echtiv ha'tom metzach ishazona ayalach. And Yom Navi says that you, B'nai So, have acted like the forehead of an ishazona, meaning that someone who's brazen, someone who does things in public that otherwise should be kept in private. And so the tzitz comes to be mechaper on the metzach, and the metzach is a reference to that brazenness. So the obvious question here is that here you have the big de kuna being mechaper on lashon hara, and you're telling me above that tzarat is what is mechaper on lashon hara. So the Gemara answer is lokasho hadahanu masav hadlohanu masav. That's whether it worked or it didn't work. I'll come back and explain that in a second. But there's a bigger problem, which is that you have other items that are in the list over here that are also have other chapara, and that are mentioned before. Shvichut damim was also mentioned before, and we said that tzarat comes from shvichut damim. We also just said here, shvichut damim is nitchaper yedei haketonet. You also have, with regards to the Hiloy Arayot, that also precipitated Nigaim or Tzarat, and also over here, the Mechnasei Bad were Mechaper al Giloy Arayot. So why is it the Gemara is only asking about the issue of Lashon Hara, when there are these other items that you also have a stira about, and the Rosh points out that there's even another item that is duplicated in the list, and that is Gasut HaRuach. Gasut HaRuach also resulted in Nigaim, and also over here, Gasut HaRuach was Nitchaper Yidei HaMitznefet. So if all these other items, why is the Gemara focused on the Lashon Hara? So Rashi explains the difference between them, and that is because he says there's something unique about Shvichut Damim and Gilui Arayot, which is that in Parshat Achrei Mot and Kedoshim with regards to Gilui Arayot, and later in Sefer Bamidbar with regards to Shvichut Damim, the Torah tells us that if an individual is engaged in Gilui Arayot, or Bnei Yisrael are engaged in Gilui Arayot, it will cause Tumat Haaretz, and the land will not stand for it, and it will spit you out of the land or kick you out of the land. And same thing with Shvichut Damim, that the land will not be Nitchaper Elo B'dam Shofcho until the murderer is brought to trial, brought to justice. But Rashi says is by the other items, it's easy to explain the disparity over here, which is that there's a difference between the individual who perpetrates the crime and the responsibility of the klal as a whole. And that's what he says here. Ikasha Maylo Motiv Le Mishvichu Tamim V'Gilu Arayot. Why doesn't he mention those items? He says, because Taritz, Da'ad Atani Bigdei Kuna Mechaprim Lava Leidi Dei. That's not another person perpetrating the crime. Ela Acherim Shayado Enashim. It's coming to cover or be Mechaper on those individuals who would receive punishment because of the perpetrator of the crime, meaning Klal Yisrael. But by Lashon Hara, we don't find such a thing that others are punished for the Lashon Hara of this individual. And that's why the Gemara is asking, why is there a Lashon Hara in Nigaim and Lashon Hara in Bigdei Kuna? The others I can explain because the cases of Nigaim are for the perpetrator himself, and the Bigdei Kuna are for those people that are held accountable for their perpetration of the crime. And that's why we don't have to ask about them. But Lashon Hara, we don't have that. The Bali Tosafot quote Rashi and then say, Velo Nehira. I don't think that's right, because the Gemara in Shavuot tells us that any time a person has the capacity to stop someone from doing an Aveira, they're held accountable for that. So we find the same type of concept by all Aveirot, not just uniquely associated with Gilui Arayot and Shvichut Damim. And he thinks that the Gemara here, when it answers for Lashon Hara, it is also answering for all the other items that are mentioned above. And then the Tosafot gives a unique understanding as to what he thinks the Gemara's answer is. So now let's go to the Gemara's answer. The Gemara's answer is Hadahanu Masav, Hadalo Hanu Masav. That's whether he was successful at carrying out whatever it was or unsuccessful. Iahanu Masav Atu Nigaim Alei. If he is successful, then he gets Nigaim. Lo Hanu Masav Miil Mechaper. Then the Miil is Mechaper. So Rashi says Ahanu Masav Shinit Kotutu Al Yado. It caused discord because of what he did. His Lashon Hara is more here Rechilut. He disclosed information to the other party. He caused discord between different individuals. So if he was successful and his Lashon Hara did that, then his punishment's going to be Nigayim. If Lo Ahanu Masav, he was unsuccessful at doing it, then it would be that the Big Dei Kuhuna would provide that Kapara. So that's the answer of the Gemara according to Rashi, but it's uniquely associated with Lashon Hara. On the other hand, the Bali HaTosafot bring a different answer, and they think this answer applies to all of these items. So the first answer Bali HaTosafot give is that it's not a problem from Mishrichu Damim, because there's a Mitat Beitin. Big Dei Kuna Mechaprim Ala Mitah. They are Mechaper on the death penalty that he's deserved of, but the Nigaim will still afflict him. So that's a very hard statement, because if he is deserving of a death penalty in Beitin, we're not going to waive it because of the Big Dei Kuna. The Gemara later on will possibly say that Mishvichu Damim here doesn't mean literally that he's Chayav Mita Bebeitin. It's in a scenario where we can't bring him to trial, so he's Chayav Mita. And so the Rishon suggests that the Big Dei Kuna take care of the Mita aspect of it, but the Nigaim still come on that individual. There's multiple areas of punishment. So the Big Dei Kuna will save him from the death penalty, which he would have gotten in a Shemaim, but he still has the Isurim that he has to undergo from the Nigaim. That's one answer that Tosafot brings. And then he says, Inami. The other possibility is the high dimishani hashas hanu masav and lo hanu masav. It applies to all of these items, whether he was successful or unsuccessful at doing it. You could say, like Rashi, successful and unsuccessful means that he was successful in carrying out the killing, so he did the Shpichut Damim, or he was successful in carrying out the Gilui Arayot. And Lo Anu Masav is a case where he wanted to do it, but he was unsuccessful at doing it. And same way that Lashon Hara, where he said it, and one time he was successful at creating discord, the other case it wasn't successful at creating discord, or he didn't speak Lashon Hara. And then the Rosh, as you can see in the Shittu Mekubetz that he brings down, that in the area of Gasuta Ruach, it's also the same thing, which is Gavar Ruach Velo Ma'al Begavuto. It's a case where he had the haughtiness, but he did not act on that haughtiness, or he did not carry out the act that this haughtiness would have led him to, so he's haughty without doing anything, or without acting upon that haughtiness. That'll be covered by the Big Day Kuhuna. You could explain it that way, but then Tosfot comes up with a much bigger chiddush and says that there are two types of each of these Averot. There's real Shvichut Damim, which is killing, and then there's deemed Shvichut Damim, which is like embarrassing someone in public. There is real Gilui Arayot, and then there is something that is deemed Gilui Arayot, and he quotes the Midrash with regards to Bnei Eli, that they used to withhold the korbanot of the women that had to be brought and cause them to stay overnight in the Mishkan, and therefore they are attributed with having Arayot with these women who came up to the Mishkan because they withheld the women from going back to their husbands. That's deemed Gilui Arayot. So what Tosfot says is, it's a difference between a Hanu Masav, if he did the real thing, which is real Shvichut Damim, real Gilui Arayot, that you need Nigaim in order to be Nitchaper. On the other hand, if it was deemed Shvichut Damim, or it was deemed Gilui Arayot, that's where the Big Day Kuna come in, and they are able to provide the kapara in those cases. Where it says, V'amar Rabbi Simon, Amar Rabbi Shuben Levi, Shnei Dvarim, Lo Matzino Lehem, Be'korbanot Korpara, V'Davar Acher, Matzino Lehem Kapara. Aren't there two Averot where the Korbanot do not provide kapara, but we find kapara through a different venue? Shvichut Damim, V'Lashon Hara. Shvichut Damim, Be'egla Arufa. We find there a different mechanism for kapara. And Lashon Hara, B'Ketoret. The Tanya, Rabbi Chanina, Lamanu L'Ketoret, Shmechaperet. So in Parshat Korach, where we just read it in Eretz Yisrael, and in Chutz La'aretz, they're going to read it this week, after the Adat Korach, where the people are complaining, and then there's a Magefa, Aaron takes the Ketoret out into the Am to save the people. Dichtei, V'yitein et haKetoret, V'yichaper al ha'am. He puts in the Ketoret, and he's Mechaper on the people. V'tanet Be'i Rabbi Shmuel, Amak Ketoret Mechaperet. What is the kapara provided by the Ketoret? Alashon hara. That is because Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu Yavod Davar Shebechashai, the Ketoret, which is done in private, whether that's the Kodesh HaKodeshim on Yom HaKippurim, where only the Kohen Gadol goes in, or whether it's the Ketoret every day, where the Kohen is doing the Ketoret on Mizbech Zahav, nobody can be in the Heichal or in that area near him at that time. So it's done in private. Bichaper Masei Chashai. And it will atone for things that are done in secrecy, as we saw before. The Lashnei is said there. People will tell over the secrets or their Lashon Hara in secrecy. And so the association is that Lashon Hara is Nitchaper through the Ketoret. So now I have three different areas of Kapara for Lashon Hara. I have the Nigaim, the Me'il of the Big Day Kuna, and now I have the Ketoret. Kasha Shvichut Damim, Shvichut Damim. Now I have a problem with Shvichut Damim. The Gemara here is only asking from two, from the Big Day Kuna to the Egla Arufa. The truth is it has three. It also has Nigaim, and then the Big Day Kuna and the Egla Arufa, and Kasha Lashon Hara, Lashon Hara. And Lashon Hara has the same problem where we have three different kaparot that are coming. Shvichut Damim, Shvichut Damim, Lo Kasha, that's not a problem. Hadiya man katle, hadlo yadiya man katle. Depends on whether we know who the murderer is or we don't know the murderer. If we don't know the murderer, then the Egla Arufa is the mechanism for kapara. If we do know who the murderer is, then the Big Day Kuna are mechaper. Where it says, didiya man katle bar ktalu. If we know who the murderer is, then he's subject to a death penalty. What are we talking about the Big Day Kuna being mechaper? Where it says, no, it's a case b'mezid v'lo atrubei. The case where it was done intentionally, mezid, but there was no hatra'ah. So we can't bring him to trial. He can't, with capital punishment for the capital crime, because he didn't meet the threshold of evidence or warnings that we need for such an individual to be put to death. But he's still mezid. So that, the Big Day Kuna will take care of. So now, the way that we explained it before, Ahanu Masav, according to Rashi, is that the Shvichut Damim, the person himself who perpetrated it, he will be nitchaper by the nigaim. The others that would have been in trouble because of this shvichut damim, if it wasn't taken care of, are nitchaper by the Big Day Kuhuna. And then if we don't know who the murderer is, then the Egla Rufa enters to provide that kapara. That's the way we would explain it. If you hold like the Balei HaTosafot, then the case of Negaim covers real murder. And then the case of Bigdei Kehuna covers the case of deemed murder. And then the Egla Rufa takes care of a case where we don't know who the murderer is or we don't know who the perpetrator of the crime is. So now we took over Shvichud Damim. Lashonara lo kasha. Lashonara is also not a problem. Habitzina, habiferestia. Depends on how the crime was committed. If it was done bitzina, then the ketoret is the right vehicle for that kapara because it's davar shebechashai. So the lashonara that's done secretly and more quietly, then the ketoret is the kapara. If it's done beferhesia, then the me'il, which makes lots of noise, is the right avenue or the right address for the kapara. And then obviously the nigaim is a case with ahanu masav. However, we interpret that before as to what ahanu masav means. Baminei Rabbi Shmuel bar Nadav or El Nadav mi Rabbi Chanina. Baminei Rabbi Shmuel bar El Nadav chatnei de Rabbi Chanina mi Rabbi Chanina. Baminei mi Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. The question was asked of Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. So whether it was Rabbi Shmuel bar Nadav who's asking Rabbi Chanina, or it was Rabbi Shmuel bar Nadav who was the son-in-law of Rabbi Chanina, from Rabbi Chanina, and then some say the question was asked to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Ma nishtana mitzora she'amra Torah v'adad yeshev michutz l'machane moshavo? What is so unique about the mitzora that he has to be isolated and put outside the camp or outside the city? The Gemara says, Hu yivdil ben ish l'ishto? He caused discord between a husband and wife, ben ish l'reihu, or between a person and his friend. That's exactly his punishment, because he caused discord amongst people, so he no longer should be amongst people. He doesn't know how to act or how to interact with people, and therefore he is punished by being pushed out of society in order that he reflect on his actions and how he's causing problems within society. I'm Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Manishtana mitzora, shamtana Torah, yavish shtei tziporim letaharato. What's so unique about the mitzvah that the Torah says part of the Tara process in the beginning, in order for him to stop counting his days to bring the korbanot, he has to bring two birds. Why are the birds the mechanism for his Tara? Makadosh Baruch Hu oseh maaseh petit. He does lots of chirping and chit-chatting. Lefika chamra Torah yavi korban petit. Therefore, he has to bring a korban. It's not literally a korban over here, but it's the Tara to mitzvah that's done with the birds who are chit-chatting and make lots of little noise, so it's the appropriate kapara, midah keneged midah, for the avera that he committed. Tan Rabbanan, lo tisna et achicha bilvavecha. One may not hate someone in their heart. Yako lo yakenu, lo yisatrenu. You'd think that maybe he's restricted from hitting him, or slapping him with the back of his hand. Velo yikal kalenu, or you can't curse him. Tamalomar bilvavecha. That the hatred here is not simply hatred that results in an action, it's hatred that is embedded in the heart. Sina shibalei v'katu midaber. Even stuff that you keep inside is problematic. Minayin le'ro'e b'chaveiro davar miguneh shechayav l'chukhikol. How do we know that if someone sees a person doing the wrong thing or inappropriate thing, that they have an obligation to chastise them? Shnemar hochiach tochiach. Requirement of tochacha. If he chastises him and he doesn't accept it, how do I know then he has to do it again and try again? Tamalomar, tochiach mikol makom. Says hochiach, that's once. Tochiach means you have to keep doing it over and over again. Yochol afilu mishtanim panav. You would think that he could keep doing this even to the point where the person's embarrassed, or he could do it by embarrassing the person. Tamalomar, velo tisalav chet. That you should not cause a sin by your tochacha, which is the halbin pnei chaveiro, to embarrass his friend in public. Pasuk is a very difficult pasuk because it says, "Lo tisna et achicha bilvavecha, hochiach tochiach et amitecha, v'lo tisa lav chet." There are three different pieces to the pasuk. Question is, what's the connection or correlation between these items? And that will then precipitate your understanding or explanation of the pasuk. So if you look, the Balei HaMusar take this in a very narrow sense and say, that just like the Gemara says over here, Lo tisna et achicha bilvavecha, that there's a restriction against having or harboring hatred inside of oneself. And the Balei Musar speak about the detrimental effects of hating and keeping hatred inside. First of all, it's an emotion that can't be controlled, and it leads to sinat chinam, to excessive hate or disproportionate hate. It's also something that is deleterious. It eats at the person and it ruins them. And it causes other bad effects when one harbors this type of hatred inside of themselves. So that's the way the Balei Musar approach it. They kind of isolate the lo tisnat achicha bilvavecha, and they take the Gemara here at face value, which is that you're not only restricted again from hitting, cursing, doing something negative towards your friend, you also are restricted from hating him or harboring ill will towards him. Like the Rambam says, that there's a restriction against sinah balev, but if one expresses that sinah, he's not in violation of the law. It's a very interesting formulation. He says, amnam, k'sharalo asinah, yodiyo shehu sono. When a person tells him that he hates him, eno avera zehalav, you're no longer in violation of this law. Aval hu avera lo tikom lo titor. But then he's in violation of not taking revenge or retribution on the individual. Vovera asay gam kain, which is ve'afta l'reacha kamocha. But sinat alev, he says, hu chet yoter chazak minakol, is the worst type of hate, the worst type of sin, as the Rambam notes in general, that the improper midot and improper thoughts are the ultimate sin, iniquity that a person can be engaged in, and therefore better to express your hatred and not harbor inside and have that sinah be a sin and be in violation of, whether it's lotikom, lotitor, or b'afterecha kamocha, that's better than be in violation of lotisnat achicha bilvavecha. It's a very interesting formulation of the Rambam. And you can see also Rav Hirsch on the Torah brings a similar sentiment, which is, no matter how much a person bothers you, hurts you, wrongs you, nevertheless, he's still achicha, and because he's part of Klal Yisrael, you can't really harbor hatred against him. The Mefresher Mikra, when speaking about Sinah, and you can see this in the many psukim in the Tanakh that speak about Sinah, major problem is the problem of Echad Bepeh Vechad Belev, which is one should not harbor hatred inside of themselves, but rather they should express that hatred. We are much more comfortable with you being honest about your feelings and saying how you feel, rather than having or harboring hatred and then putting on a face of love. That is a chad bepeh v'chad belev, and that is a dishonest or not a true way to behave. And therefore, there's a problem with being inconsistent in your behavior and harboring this hatred without it being expressed. And then, Mefarshei HaMikra, in discussing what is the requirement of lo tisnat achicha bilvavecha, hocheach tocheach tamitecha, they then, playing on this idea of not being echad bepeh v'chad belev, say that the two are correlated. You may not harbor hatred inside, hocheach tocheach, you must speak out. You must say what is in your heart. You have to speak about what is bothering you. Now, obviously that doesn't mean just blurt everything out. There is some sort of etiquette and proper way to approach this. They then have two approaches that you find in the Rishonim and the Mefarshei HaMikra, as to what does it mean, lo tisnat achicha bilvavecha, hocheach tocheach tamitecha. One of them is, don't harbor ill will. Hocheach tocheach. If you tell your friend what he did wrong to you, then you won't harbor the ill will, because he'll know what he did wrong, and then he'll have the opportunity to apologize, he'll have the opportunity to rectify it, or you'll get it off your shoulders, because you know you've expressed it to him, rather than having this ill will or harboring this hatred inside of you, which again, the Balei Musar speak about the detrimental effects of harboring such hatred. That's the view brought by the Ramban, the Sefer Yireim, and others, that the Hocheach Tocheach Tamitecha is the resolution of Lo Tisnat Achicha Bavavecha. Don't hate him in your heart, but rather Hocheach Tocheach Tamitecha. The other approach that the Ibn Ezra notes and others bring after the Ibn Ezra as well is that you should not harbor the ill will inside, because if you tell your friend how you're feeling about what he did, then he can respond to you. And that is, maybe he'll rectify your misunderstanding of what took place. You thought you were wronged. You thought he did something wrong. And then when you go to tell him what's bothering you, then you'll no longer have ill will towards him. You will no longer feel negative towards him, because he'll rectify that situation by telling you what really happened, or telling you that he didn't mean to do it, or that he's sorry about doing it. And that would be the Loti Salav Chet for the Ramban and the Yireim and the others who say that the Hochiach the Hochiach the Tamitech is the way that you remove Loti Snaat Achicha Belvarecha. The Loti Salav Chet means that you shouldn't be burdened with the sin of harboring that ill will. So rather, Hochiach the Hochiach the Tamitecha, so that that ill will doesn't stay with you and you carry the sin rather than expressing it so that the other party can rectify it. And then there are others of the later Mefarshei Mikra who basically say that both are true, and that the whole point of the Hochiach Tochiach Tamitecha is for one of two things to happen. Either you are then corrected about your misunderstanding, or the other party is made aware of the wrong that they have done, and they can apologize and rectify it. And therefore, Hochiach Tochiach Tamitecha is a much better solution to the problem of Lo Tisnat Achicha Bilvavecha, rather than harboring that ill will over time. And if you go to the Monea Mitzvot, they have these different formulations as being the mitzvah of Lo Tisna et Achicha Bilvavecha. The Gemara in Bava Metzia and in the end of Psachim discusses that there are sometimes people who are appropriate to hate, and generally those are people who are doing wrong, and they are not keeping the mitzvot, or they're not acting appropriately with other people. So there is possibly, according to some of the Rishonim, a permissibility of hating individuals. But again, that has to be carefully managed, and the Baal Tosfot and Psachim speak about the dangers of engaging in such activity of hating others, and that we try to avoid it at all costs. The Smag makes a nice point, which is that much of what precipitates hatred amongst people is the feeling that somehow the other person is taking away that which belongs to you. And since he's taking what belongs to you, or garnering the compliments, the wealth, and all the other things that you think belong to you, that precipitates the hatred in the individual. And what he says is that one has to be aware of the fact that Hashem gives each individual that which they need, and no other individual can take away your parnasa or take away that which you are deserving of. And so therefore you don't need to hate anyone else. You just have to do what you need to do and not worry about anyone else or what is happening or what other benefits or good is happening to anyone else. Okay, now the Gemara continues then to discuss the issue of Tochacha and Tanya, Amir Rabbi Tarfon, Tama or Tmiyani, Emiesh Bedor Azeh Shemikabel Tochacha. I don't think there's anyone in this generation who is worthy of receiving Tochacha. He doesn't know how to accept Tochacha. If Amarlo told Kesam mi ben einecha, he tells him to take out the toothpick between his eyes, or really mi ben shinecha, between your teeth. Amarlo, the person who's getting rebuked, will say, Tol Korah mi ben einecha. Why don't you take that big beam out from between your eyes? Which means that the person giving tochacha has to be a person of stature, a person who is of proper conduct. And so the problem is that we don't have anybody who is so righteous or such a tzaddik that they can go then and rebuke others. Because as soon as they rebuke others, the people are going to just respond to them. Before you come and rebuke me about this, why don't you take care of that thing or this thing or those things that you do wrong? That's the idea. If you come and tell him to take out the toothpick between or the little splinter between his teeth, he's going to tell you to take out the big beam between your eyes. Whether he's additive or he's maybe going against what Rabbi Tarfon said and says the problem's not in the recipients of the tochacha, the problem is in the givers of the tochacha, that we don't have people in this generation that know how to rebuke or how to give tochacha. And that's the problem, because they don't know how to do it b'chokhmah, with wisdom, and how to do it so that the people accept it. So that's the deficit in our generation, not the fact that there aren't people who can accept or receive the tochacha. Ram Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, Meid ani alai shemayim baretz, so he was a Talmud with Rabbi Akiva in front of Rabban Gamliel. And he says, I used to tell on him to Rabban Gamliel. And then he got hit, or Rabbi Gamliel used to punish him. So he says, and the more I did this, the more he loved me, or the closer we got. The Kayem Mashinamar. Is the fulfillment of the pasuk in Mishle that says, "Al tochach leitz pen isna echa," do not rebuke the fool or the scoffer, pen isna echa, because he will come to hate you. Hochach lechacham ve'araveka. But when you give chastisement or rebuke to the one who is wise, he will love you because he knows you're doing it for his benefit. So it's clear here that when he says that Laka Akiva doesn't mean he was actually hit, it means that Rabbi Gamliel chastised Rabbi Akiva because of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri was informing on him or saying that Rabbi Akiva was wronging him in some way. And Rabbi Akiva accepted that rebuke from Rabbi Gamliel, and he didn't hold a grudge against Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So it speaks to the greatness of Rabbi Akiva, who is the Chacham, who's wise enough to understand that the rebuke that he's receiving is for his benefit. Barmine Rabbi Yehuda Breid Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Yehuda Breid Rabbi Shimon asked, doesn't say who he asked the question of, probably is of Rabbi Shimon. Tochcha lishma ve'anavash lo lishma heimeinayu adifa. The person gives rebuke for the right reason, l'shem shemayim, or a person has anava, has humility, but it's shelo lishma, he does it for the wrong reasons, which one of these is better? Amarle, v'lo modit da'anava lishma adifa. Don't you agree that if it was humility that was done l'shem shemayim, that would be better than anything else? Damar mar, anava gudola mikulan. So that anava sits above all of them, the list of Pinchas ben Yair in the Midot of the Adam and the ways that a person grows, so anava sits on top of all of those items. Shelo lishma name adifa. Then by definition, the anava shelo lishma would also be greater. Damar Yudam Arav, the olam yasok adam betorah ubimitzvot, afo pi shelo lishma, a person should engage in Torah mitzvot, even if it's not done for the right motive, shemitok shelo lishma balishma, because even if it's done for the incorrect motive, eventually you'll get to the right place and it'll be done for the right motive. So that means that even if you're doing anava shelo lishma, if anava lishma is greater, then anava shelo lishma is also greater, and therefore that takes precedence over here. Gemara wants to know, hechidami tochcha lishma v'anava shelo lishma. What's an example of tochcha that's given for the right reasons, l'shem shemayim, and anava that is done shelo lishma? The other Rav Huna v'chir barav, an incident with Rav Huna and Chir Barav, Abu Yatfe Kameh de Shmuel, they were learning by Shmuel. Amalei Chir Barav. So Chir Barav says to Shmuel, Chazimar de Karmitzarli, he says about Rav Huna that he's bothering me, he's hitting me, he's giving me a hard time. He tells Shmuel that. Kabil Alei de Tulo Mitzarli. So Shmuel forced Rav Huna to be Mikabel that he would no longer bother Chir Barav. Boter de Nofik, after Chir Barav leaves, Amalei Hachi v'Hachi Ka'avid. Then Rav Huna all of a sudden comes up with an explanation for why he's hitting or bothering Chir Barav. It's because Chir Barav has been doing all these things to him. Why are you telling me this after Chir Barav left? Why don't you tell me this when Chir Barav was here? I didn't feel that it was appropriate that through me there should be embarrassment caused to an offspring of Rav. This is very interesting. So the lo lishma aspect over here is the fact that he was an anav and didn't speak up when making the claim against him and when Shmuel was chastising him for that. But he wasn't a true anav because in the end he does disclose the information. So that might be what the anavah shelo lishma is, that he did it temporarily, but in the end he's going to disclose the information. That's one possibility. The other possibility is anavah lo lishma is the only reason he didn't speak up is because of Rav. It's not because of Chir by Rav or his humility. It's because of the stature of Rav. So the impetus from not speaking up and being humble was because of Rav, the father of Chir Barav, not because of his own humility. Or Tosfot brings another possibility, which is Anavash Lo Lishma is Mishum Ga'ava, is because the person is doing it in order to get a compliment that he is a humble individual, because of the fact that he listens to people denigrating him and he doesn't respond, and then people say, what a tzaddik, what an honor this person is. The Rashi explains, he pretends like he doesn't want to give him tochacha. And the only reason that he's doing it is not because he doesn't really want to give tochacha. It's because he doesn't want the other person to hate him. So it's done for the wrong motive. He really should be giving him tochacha, but he doesn't want the other person to hate him, so therefore he withholds the tochacha. Tosfot does not like that explanation of Rashi, because he says that person's a rasha. That person's supposed to give tochacha. He's not being an anav shelo lishma. He's doing the wrong thing. He's supposed to be giving tochacha, and he doesn't give tochacha. So he doesn't accept that that is anava shelo lishma. Now, as far as tochacha lishma, it's not clear here. The Gemara asks, how do I know what's tochacha lishma and anava shelo lishma? It's clear from the story what the anava shelo lishma is. The tochacha lishma, it's not clear, and might be what is being referenced to Chir Barav, who gave tochacha to Rav Huna in speaking to Shmuel, that was tochacha lishma, that's possibly what the Gemara is doing. Or it might be that the Gemara just grouped them together and only brings a case of an example of anavash lo lishma, which is the harder one to understand. Tochacha lishma is easy to understand. We don't need to be brought an example to understand it. Alright, the Gemara says, ad heichan tochacha. How far does the person have to go in giving rebuke to another party? Rav amar ad haka'a. That's really the point where the person's ready to hit you. At that point, you can stop. Shmuel amar ad klala. Until the point where they're going to curse you. Rav Yochanan amar ad nezifa. Until they're going to give you a strong rebuke. Kitanae. Similar to a machloket tanaim that we have. Rav Eliezer amar ad haka'a. Rav Yishuv amar ad klala. And as I omer, ad nezifa. So the same positions that we saw by the Amoraim, we see by the Tanaim. Amar Nachman Yitzhak, Shloshtam Mikra Echad Darshu. They all learn it out from the same sukim that are found in Shmuel Aleph, which is the Haftorah for Machara Chodesh, where Yonatan and David have created a covenant between them, a brit between them, by which Yonatan will not do wrong to David. And then David leaves, because he knows that Shaul is out to kill him. And they come to the meal at the palace, and on the first day, Shaul doesn't say anything about the absence of David. On the second day, he does say something, and he's, where is this? Where is David? Yonatan explains that David had asked permission to go home to eat with his family, and therefore he had given him permission and dismissed him so that he didn't have to be at the Shulchan HaMelech. And then Shaul responds to that, Vayachar af Shaul b'Yonatan. Shaul gets very angry at Yonatan. Ben Navat Hamardot, you are a rebellious son. Hello, Yadati, ki bilcher atal ben ishar the vashtecha ulevoshet ervati mecha. Don't you know that as long as ben ishar is the chosen one, that will be to your embarrassment and the embarrassment of your mother, meaning that he will displace you as the king. As long as David's alive, you will not be the reigning king. Now call him back here because he's deserving of death. Then Yonatan responds and says, why should he be deserving of death? What did he do wrong? Then Shaul picks up the dagger to go kill Yonatan. And then Yonatan understands that Shaul is really intending to kill David. That they all learned it out from the same pasuk, which is Vaycharav Shaul b'Yonatan Yomanor ben Navat Amardut. The man amar ad haka'a, the one who says that it's haka'a dichtev lakoto. Man amar klala dichtev levoshtecha levoshet ervati mecha. Man amar neziva dichtev Vaycharav Shaul, and that he got angry and called him ben Navat Amardut. The man amar nezifa, the one who says that you do it until the point where he gets angry. Haktev haka'a uklala. What about the fact that it also mentions that he wanted to hit him and he wanted to curse him? Shani hotam da gav chivita yiterad hava be Yonatan b'David masar nafshei tfei. Because of Yonatan's closeness to David HaMelech, he went further than he should have. I mean that his only requirement was to only go as far as nisiva, as his father becoming angry. The fact that Yonatan persisted afterwards is not what everybody would do. That has to do with the unique relationship between Yonatan and David. That Yonatan wanted to protect David, so he went beyond what was his call of duty. And that was once his father was angry, he could have stopped at that point. Now, the truth is, as Tosfot points out, Vim tomar leman damar klala, haktiv haka. What about the one who says klala? It also says haka. Yesh tomar, the shema kadimishane. You could give the same answer, which is that he went further than he should have in this case. Because of his love, you could answer the same thing. Or maybe the haka'a is not in the same pasuk of Vayichar Af Sha'ul, and therefore he doesn't consider it to be a part of the response to the tochacha, although again that seems a little bit backwards because the tochacha happens after that pasuk before the haka'a, which again is the most supportive of that position of haka'a. But obviously these individuals see the statement of Yonatan that he gave permission to David to go as being a veiled tochacha to Shaul, and that precipitates the reaction of Shaul, which that is why they say that's the limit of the tochacha that he has to give, even though Yonatan goes a step further afterwards, but that's based on what we said here in the Gemara, that he loved David so much that he went with Nimishur at the din in terms of the tochacha that he gave, even though he was no longer responsible or obligated to do such. And this Gemara has to be reconciled with the Gemara that's found in Yevamot that says that just like there is a mitzvah to give tochacha that will be listened to, there's also a mitzvah not to give tochacha that will not be listened to. And therefore, you'd have to come up with a reconciliation as to when it's appropriate not to give tochacha, and when it's appropriate to give tochacha, despite the negative reaction that you're going to get for the tochacha. The Rishonim Achronim over there try to give different distinctions as to when it's appropriate to give tochacha and when it's inappropriate to give tochacha. And again, these are complicated rules because it really depends on context. It depends on the person who's giving the tochacha. It depends on the recipient. It depends on the nature of the aveira that we're speaking about. And all of those factors are ways that the Rishonim and Achronim try to distinguish between the two memorot of the Gemara, the one here and the one in Yevamot. How far does a person have to go to not change where he normally sleeps or where he's normally hosted? Rav Amar ad haka'ah, to the point where he's going to be beaten up. Shmuel Amar ad she'yavshilo kelav, to the point where they throw him out with his possessions. V'akadidei, if he himself is being hit, Kuliyama lo plige, everybody agrees that you don't go back there and you don't have to stay at that host anymore. V'avshalat kelev l'achorav, and again, if they throw your stuff out, then also kuliyama lo plige, there you don't, nobody argues that you don't have to go back. Ki plige b'haka'ad debitu, where they're hitting his wife. My savar, candidly day lo mitzarle, since they're not bothering him, my nafkale mino, so why shouldn't he go back there? My savar, ate le chude, it could cause him problem or discord between him and his wife. First of all, it's a very difficult statement of the Gemara. How could it be possible that the person's willing to go back to the host when they go to the host and his wife gets abused or hit by the host or hostess? Why is that acceptable type of behavior? People give different answers over here. Then one that I thought that was the most plausible is the fact that the last time they stayed there, they were hitting his wife. Now he returns to that host, but his wife is not with him. Question is now, my nafkale mine, they don't hit him, they hit his wife, and his wife's not with him, so why shouldn't he stay here? Or do we say that if he stays there, it's going to cause discord with his wife, because his wife's going to say, you went back to the place where they hit me? So that would be the most plausible explanation, unless you say it was different times and the social norms were different in that time. But it seems strange to me that a person would be willing to accept the beating of his wife in order to just stay at the same host again, because there's some maila, as we're going to see in a second, to stay in the same place that you stayed before. Chokach lama, why does that person have to undergo so much or so much abuse before they leave and don't go back to the same host as before? Damamar aksanai pogeim v'nifgam, that a person who doesn't go back to the previous host or they do not come together, it affects both parties. It reflects negatively on the host when a guest doesn't return to the host, and it reflects negatively on the guest when he doesn't go back to the host, in both ways, because people are going to say the reason the guest didn't go back was the host doesn't treat him well. And people will say the reason that the host didn't have him back again is because the guest didn't act appropriately. So it's negative for both parties when they break up their relationship, and therefore there is a premium for keeping that relationship intact. How do we see this in the Torah? How do we see this midah in the Torah? By Avraham Avinu, shenemar, because it says, by Avraham Avinu, adamakom asher yasham aholo betchila, that he went back to the same location where he had set up his tent in the first place. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi China, mar mihocha. It's from here. By Yelech lamasav. It says that he went by his journeys, meaning that when he went down south, and on his way back, he stayed at the same places he stayed when he was going down south to Mitzrayim. On his return north, he stayed in those same locations. My benayu, what's the difference between them? Ikebenayu achsenai dakrai. He stayed there, not on a regular basis, but on a one-time basis. So according to Rav Yehuda Merav, although it's a permanent location, it is where he sets up his tent, that's something that you're makpid on to go back to. But if it was just dakrai, then that's not the case. Whereas Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina says, even the masav, even when you're traveling, and you happen to stop at this place for one time, then you should also, on the way back or other times, stay in that place again. How How do we know that a person should not change his craft and his father's craft, or umanato might be the umanot, that which he learned from his father and that which he learned from his forefathers? Shnemar, because the pasuk says in Malachim Aleph, and there is a parallel pasuk in Divrei Yamim that will help us out over here, Vayikshlach HaMelech Shlomo, Vayikach Et Chiram Mitzor. So Shlomo Melech calls for this individual Chiram, who's living in Tzor. It happens to be interesting because the king of Tzor is also Chiram. Ben Isha Almana. He's the son of a woman who's a widow. Hu Mimatei Naphtali. He came from the Shevet of Naphtali. Vaviv Ish Tzori. And his father was a person from Tzor. The Mefarshim over here said Ish Tzor is not because he was a person of Tzor, but rather because he lived in Tzor. He was a Jew who lived in Tzor, and that's why he was called Ish Tzori. Choresh Nechoshet, he was an expert in copper. V'imaleit chuchma v'tvuna v'tadat asod kol melacha b'nechoshet, he was a craftsman of copper. V'yavo alamelech shlomo v'yasad kol melachto, and he works in the Mikdash to make all of the copper utensils and all the copper work that needs to be done. That's the pasuk that's found in Sefer Melachim. If you look in Divrei Yamim, the parallel pasuk in Divrei Yamim is that Shlomo HaMelech sends to Huram or Chiram up in Tzor and says him, send me an expert to deal with the Nechoshet. And he sends him down this individual, Ben Isha Min Benot Dan. It's from a woman who was from Shevet Dan. Vaviv Ish Tzori, and his father was from Tyre. Now, if you take it at face value, and it doesn't seem so far-fetched, it would seem to me there was an intermarriage between Jews from Shevet Dan with a non-Jew from Tyre, from Tzor, and that would make sense because Dan or Shevet Dan was up in the north, and they had displaced part of the kingdom of Tzor over there when they took over by Tel Dan. And so that may have been some interaction between the different cultures. Although again, the Mefarshim all here say, Be'achad, that the story is not that he was a non-Jewish man, but rather he was a man that lived in Tzor. He was a Jewish man that lived in Tzor. So he knew not just about copper in this story, he knows about all the different metals and all the different crafts. He was an expert. The question is, which one of the two psukim brings the proof to the fact that he didn't deviate from the crafts of his father or his forefathers? The pasuk here in Divrei Yamim says that he was a son of a woman from Dan. His father was an Ish Tzori, Yodea. The Yodea is a dangling modifier, and it's not clear whether the Yodea is referencing back to the Ish Tzori, meaning his father was someone who had all these crafts, or it's going back on the Ben Isha. The son had all these crafts, and so that way you would explain that his father was also a craftsman. And that's what it means that over here, that he followed in the way of his fathers. That's one possibility, and that's what Rashi quotes in Divrei Yamim. Although the Gemara here seems to go in a different direction, and says over here, Vamamar imei mi beit Dan. His mother was from Dan, Chtiv, and then we have the pasuk in the Torah that says, Ito et Eliyav ben Achisamach lematei Dan. That Bezalel has his right-hand man, Eliyav ben Achisamach, from Matei Dan. Was the same description we just saw in the Psukim here in Divrei Yamim, is the way that they describe both Bezalel and Eliyav ben Achisamach, that they were people or craftsmen of tremendous skill. And so if his mother was from Dan, here's a description of the forefathers of Dan that had that same skill or that same craft. And so that would be the proof here, through his mother's side, not just through his father's side. The resolution to that might actually be the girsa that Tosfot has, which is, Ashi Adam me umanot aviv, umanot avotav. So umanot aviv would be the Ish Tzori, and umanot avotav would be through his mother's side, which is Eliyav ben Achisamach. And therefore it's actually, he's mekayim both of them because he had this craft from both sides of the family. How little a thing do we consider to be Yisurim? Amar Rabbi Elazar Kosha Argolo Beged Ubosh. They weave for him a custom-made piece of clothing, Bein Mitkabel Olav, and it doesn't fit him. That's Yisurim. Matkiv La Rova Zeira. So the younger Rova asked, Itema Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Gedola Mezu Amru. They say even more than that. He wanted his wine to be diluted in warm or hot water, and it said they did it in cold water. He wanted it in cold water, and they did it in hot water. You have a much higher standard. You're saying it's Yisurim, where he weaves a piece of clothing, it doesn't fit him. That's a significant Yisurim. We're saying even a small item like cold and hot water got changed, that's called Yisurim. Even if you put on your clothing by accident inside out, and then you have to turn it over and re-put it on, that's Yisurim. Some say that it was in a Braita. Put his hand into his pocket to take out 3 coins. And only 2 came out. Now he has to go back into his pocket to get the 3rd coin. Davka shalosh, valubi yado shtayim. It's only in that direction when he wanted 3 and 2 came out. Avoshtayim valubi yado shalosh. If he only wanted 2 and he got 3, that's not a big deal. Lo, deleka tircha lemishdayu. If you just throw the coin back down, you can throw it back into your pocket. That's not a big deal. But you have to go fish in and pull out the other one again. That's when it's extra effort, and that's considered to be Yisurim. B'chol kach lama. Why are they competing over here to say what is the most minute detail, little thing that happens that's called Yisurim? Why is there so much said about this? Netanya, the Beit Rabbi Shmuel, because of the brayta of the Beit Midrash of Rabbi Shmuel, koshu aruah lav 40 yom below Yisurim, any person who has 40 days that go by without any Yisurim, kibel olamo. He's already received his olam haba, and that means that he will be punished latid lavo, and he's getting all his reward in this world. B'marav Amre, in Eretz Yisrael, they say, puranot mizdamnot lo. He should be ready for some really bad stuff about to happen, because he just used up all of his zchuyot. And that's because Hashem gives Yisurim to us in this world to cleanse us and to take care of all the things that are wrong in this world, so that we'll be nochel olam haba. But if he's a Rosh Gamur, or he's something that's not going to get Olam Haba, Hashem rewards him with Olam Haba in this world. And that means that he'll have a time period where he has no Yisurim. That's the receipt, or that's the reward that he's getting in Olam Hazeh. And that's a bad sign, because that means that what's waiting for you in Olam Haba is not going to be good. And that's why they want to say that any one of these little things is considered to be Yisurim. And that means that you haven't gone through 40 days without any Yisurim. So even little small things are classified as Yisurim, and then are not considered to be a Yisurim-free time period. Because again, it's an inauspicious sign to not have any Yisurim for 40 days. And the Marava, it says that not only is it an inauspicious sign, it means that something really bad is about to happen. Okay, we're going to stop here by the top line of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph.